5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Model Moon!
The dark side of the Huddle Moon. Immutably amazing crypto wisdom. On today's episode, we talk to Ryan Tucker about how he first got into crypto. We get his unique take on crypto trading, and we learn how he went from an employee to a business owner. We also get his take on business formation, business opportunities, and entrepreneurship in 2020. If you're a business owner yourself and looking, we are currently leasing retail, commercial, and light industrial space on the dark side of the Huddle Moon.
This show is proudly sponsored by Salamantech's point-of-sale devices and software. Tired of all the headaches dealing with cryptocurrency? You don't know what a private key is? You don't want to deal with exchanges? Well, if you're a business and you just want to run your business without thinking about cryptocurrency headaches, look no further than Salamantech's. We provide point-of-sale software that allows you to get paid in fiat currency, that's euros, allowing your customers to pay in cryptocurrency, that's BTC, ETH, and a host of others.
Dark Side of the Huddle Moon proudly uses the audio services of Eye the Sound. Beyond the amazing sound production, they've really been a sounding board, pun intended, for our show, giving us great customer support and constructive criticism and feedback. So if you want a little bit more personalized attention you're not going to get from a bigger provider, check out iTheSound.com.
Huddle Moon!
All right, and we're back with another episode of Dark Side of the Huddle Moon. I'm Blockade here with Josh today, and today we're doing another interview. Our special guest today is going to be Ryan Tucker. He's an entrepreneur, a crypto enthusiast, and crypto trader. How are you doing today, Ryan?
Doing very well, thank you. How are you boys doing?
Exceptionally well, thank you.
Yeah, I'm doing great.
Happy New Year to you as well.
Oh, Happy New Year, thank you.
Ryan, are you going to the dark side of the Huddle Moon in 2020?
I've been there, man. I'm on the dark side of the Huddle Moon, and I'm ready.
All right. So before we talk about the crypto stuff, maybe, Ryan, you could tell us a little bit about yourself. And maybe you could tell us where you're from, what you're doing, and kind of how you got into entrepreneurship. Besides talking about crypto, a lot of people on the channel want to start their own business. So you started working for someone else and you decided to set up your own business. So can you get into that a little bit?
Sure. So when I was fresh out of college, I sort of knew I was going to go into some sort of marketing sales position. And I ended up at a company right in the same town I went to high school. And I was a salesperson for them for about 7 years before becoming a sales manager. So we worked with in-flight comfort products. So if you ever fly JetBlue, American, British Airways, anything like that, pretty much anything you find in the cabin, we were outsourcing to a factory in China and shipping it to them and marking it up and making money that way. So I managed accounts like JetBlue and United Airlines and things like that. So I would I'd be the first point of contact for the buyers at those airlines, and also worked a lot with China, visited a few factories, did some things like that. So I really liked the job. We had a management change probably the first year I was a sales manager at the company. And I disagreed a little bit with some of the philosophies, but it was fine. And it kind of all built up. And as this was all happening, I was doing a small side business of screen printing and embroidery, almost doing the exact same thing we were doing with the headphones, but on a very small scale. So taking orders and subcontracting it out to local vendors or whoever. And one day, sort of without announcement, they changed the way we were getting paid, our commission structure, and I don't really know what happened. I call it my Jerry Maguire moment, and something just snapped in my head, and I quit. I just told them what I thought of them and left the office that day and never went back. Got home and really had some deep thinking to do, sort of was very scared applied for a bunch of jobs, got the ones I didn't want, didn't get the ones I did want. So I decided to take my little tiny side hustle and I cleared out my 401k and I put it all into the business and started going. And now the company is NPT Sportswear in Newport. And you know, it's still a small business, but it's just sort of evolved from a little side project for extra money into what I'm doing full time now.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So yeah, a lot of people who want to get into entrepreneurship, they got a full time job and they're doing a side hustle on the side. It sounds like they pulled a little contract or compensation bait and switch, and that kind of was the impetus to get you out the door and go for it, huh?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's having a side hustle is was really it was just at a it was joy for me. It was nice to build something I enjoy. Enjoyed the challenges of it, and you know, it just sort of happened that when the time came that I lost my mind, I had something to go to, and you know, side hustles can be beneficial like that for sure.
And did you see a market need for your business, and how did it scale up? Was it pretty slow in the beginning, and were you worried about that?
So it's funny because it's one of the markets that I didn't know at the time, but it turns out that there's not really a good good way to do comparative shopping online like there is with a lot of other businesses nowadays. So it sort of happened that, you know, I found out that everybody was paying all different kinds of prices for the same goods. Quality was different. Lead times were different. Like the players in the industry were very scattered. There's no Walmart, say, of the screen printing industry, no really big giants that are just going to come in and knock you out. So it sort of seemed that there was room in the market to find space as a middle person to really bridge the gap between manufacturing and service, where, you know, a lot of the companies that are very big, have large production capabilities, tend to focus on those capabilities, and they're hard to get a hold of. They don't answer the phone. They don't answer emails. They do good work, but they're not really customer facing. They don't have that sort of mentality. So what we do is sort of bridge that gap between the two and create some value in the supply chain that way.
Yeah. So you're kind of the go-between between the buyers and the factories, I guess, in China. Would that be correct?
Well, now it's mostly local, but we do some things with China. So I'm not as involved as I was when I was doing the airlines, but we do source some of the high volume stuff, you know, t-shirts and caps and stuff like that from China when the volume dictates.
Okay. Well, I want to transition into crypto, but before we do that, can you tell us why you call yourself Mr. Rain? I think our listeners and Josh would find this entertaining.
So my name is Ryan, and when I was working a lot with a particular blanket factory in Shaoxing, the sales rep for the company couldn't really say the word Ryan, so she called me Mr. Rain. But she said, you know, something happened one day, and there was a problem with an order, and it was just, she was Mr. Rain, I'm so sorry, please. And she said Mr. Rain so many times, it just sort of stuck in my head, and I thought it was funny, and it was just a little spin on the way they would say my name, and kind of became a joke, and I thought it was a fun Instagram name. So there it is.
Nice. All right. So
that's interesting. I really like that about the Mr. Rain thing. That really cracked me up. I enjoyed that.
Sometimes they're doing their best.
In-flight comfort products in China, right? That's how it all started.
Yeah, in-flight comfort products. And I would always tell Annie that don't worry about it because your English is 10,000 times better than my Chinese. So I appreciate the effort. No, in-flight comfort products. So pretty much anything but food that you would find in a commercial airline in the cabin.
That's very interesting. Like one of my colleagues at Salamantex is directly involved in that business and has been for like 12 years. And they also sell comfort products to airlines.
Huge market.
So
yeah,
I reckon you might know them, but we'll talk about that another time.
Oh, it's possible, yeah.
That's pretty cool. Also based in China, so very interesting. Out of Hong Kong, you know, through Shenzhen. Business models have changed the last 10 years, but, you know. Anyway, yeah. How did you get into crypto then? How did you make that transition from businessman to, you said you've got your Jerry Maguire moment where you're like, all right, fuck it, I'm off. See you later. I'm doing my own thing now. And then you start to do your own thing. How did you transition from, you know, your MPT sportswear to cryptocurrency? Like, where was that? How did that happen?
They're actually sort of separate. So I guess I would call myself sort of, I started out as, I guess, a Ron Paul libertarian type. So I believe in sound money. I believe in limited supply. I read a few of his books and got into some other things, and sort of like just one day in my early to mid 20s, just realized that I was a libertarian. It wasn't like I want to be one, and you know, a lot of these, we won't get into politics, but anyway, but like that's just where I found myself.
Our New Year's resolution for this show is no bullshit.
Perfect. I like
no shilling, just pure, straight, pulling no punches conversations. So,
there was a lot of you know, red pills I had to swallow along the way, but it really it started with money and with figuring out that what really, really started it was an old documentary, which is mostly bullshit if you look it up now, but there's some interesting points, called Zeitgeist. And they do a segment on the Federal Reserve. And I found that segment to be really fascinating because the concepts had never been introduced to me in any way, shape, or form. You just sort of brought up in this country thinking that the Federal Reserve is a branch of the government, so to speak, and is under jurisdiction of the president and Congress and whatever. And sort of turns out it's a bunch of private bankers that have more control and can't get audited and things like that. So I did some more reading on all this stuff and looking at, you know, Keynesian economics versus Austrian schools of thought and things like that, and really was big in my own mind on a gold standard or some sort of fixed currency supply or some way to bridge this gap. Because you look at, just looking at debt levels, spending, you know, it's crazy the way governments operate nowadays. And I never really got why, and I do get why, but that sort of brought me to this point where I had a friend who was just like, there's this thing, Bitcoin. And, but you know, I'm like, oh, this is stupid. Why are you putting your money? This is when Bitcoin was probably about $1,000. I think it was probably late 2016, I want to say, when he first started getting me interested. And he's like, yeah, it went from like 500 to 1,000 and back down to 800 or whatever it did. And I'm like, you're crazy. Like, why are you dealing with all this volatility and your magic internet beans? I don't get it. And he sort of sat down with me one day over a beer and sort of explained the economics of it and, you know, what the computing network that makes it valuable and mining and sort of just the real crypto 101 basics. And that immediately appealed to my sense of, you know, a limited money supply and sound money. And the more I looked into it, it was pretty obvious to me that crypto was, you know, money 2.0, better than what we're doing in almost every single way, just not really a concept that has caught fire yet, because most people, frankly, don't give a shit about sound money. They just want to, you know, go to work and go home and have money to go on vacation.
Yeah, definitely. What would you say to people who, like the Peter Schiff types, who say like, oh, crypto isn't backed on anything. You need it to be a gold standard or some hard asset backing the money. What would you say to that, or what's your reaction to that?
See, I disagree. I think that's, I understand where Peter Schiff is coming from, and I've always respected him because I was into gold before I was into crypto. I think he's got too much in skin in the gold game, and he's obviously biased. I respect what he's done and what he's built around the gold asset. But, you know, I think when you look at this society moving forward, things that are physical and things that are online, you know, don't necessarily, they can be equal in value. Digital assets, I think, are a real thing. I think you're going to see more things like that being tokenized, and the value of having thousands, millions of computers running, trillion terabytes of hash or whatever. It's like the Bitcoin network has gone up tenfold since the peak of 2017, the hash power. And you keep looking at all the computing power and all the energy and resources and really smart people and companies that are putting time into this. And I don't see how it's not valuable. I can't look at it the same way and say, oh, I need to be able to hold this thing in order for it to have value, because Peter Schiff probably has a checking account that he does online, and he's got Venmo or he's got whatever. He has digital assets. It's just not in blockchain form. We all have digital assets. We're already using them. It's just the problem now is that there's a central point of failure with all of these servers that host the information that has your checking account and your real estate transactions and your credit score and voting and whatever else it might be. When you have a single point of failure, you are, you're more at risk. So I think the value of the network is tremendous. And I don't think he allows himself to see it.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. Yeah, and also Peter does accept Bitcoin to buy gold. So
does famous Bitcoin detractor Mark Cuban constantly talk shit about Bitcoin, but the Dallas Mavericks take Bitcoin for payments if you want to go to a Dallas Mavericks basketball game. So go figure.
Yeah. All right. So now I want to ask you, I guess me and Josh are big cryptocurrency guys. I kind of come from a similar philosophical and political financial philosophy when it comes to sound money and that kind of stuff. So I'm kind of curious just to get your take. These days, what excites you about crypto? Is there a certain project? Is it just cryptocurrency in general? Are you more of a Bitcoin maximalist? Do you think it's, there can be lots of different competing cryptocurrencies? Like, what's your feeling about the space these days?
Well, unfortunately, I don't think there's a whole lot to be excited about price-wise right now. But I'm not quite a maximalist. I think there's going to be room for numerous cryptocurrencies and platform coins to be able to coexist. I don't think we can support a healthy ecosystem of 3,000 or whatever we have now. There's a lot of shit coins out there. But I'm Bitcoin number one for me. I don't hate any of the other payment coins. I think there's probably room for them. I just don't know how things will shake out, and I prefer to keep my investments mostly with BTC on the store value payment side of things. recently, I've been very bullish on privacy coins. I think the next big run is probably going to be with privacy cryptocurrency, privacy coins. Like, if you look at valuations. If Bitcoin is really worth $7,400 or whatever it is right now, and Monero is $50 a coin, and they essentially do the same thing, except Monero, you can send anywhere, anytime, and basically nobody knows what's going on with that. And the value is almost, Monero doesn't have the hash power or the network or the developers that Bitcoin has, so maybe it shouldn't be as valuable. But if you're looking at, 10 to 15 to 1 price difference, I'm really bullish on that, because I think you're going to see a great demand in the next decade for privacy. People are finally figuring out that data is worth more than oil and gold. And back to Peter Schiff, that for the first time, I think ever, last year or the year before that, data was a higher market cap than oil. So there you go. So digital information is worth a lot of money.
Yeah, I agree that digital information is worth a lot of money. And I agree that there's got to be a room for many different competing change. I think that's important. I think Eric Voorhees, he had a good analogy, and I'm going to steal it, that think of Bitcoin, BTC, as like the trunk of a tree, and all these other ones are like branches, Monero, Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum, you name it. And we see a lot of infighting, people from the BSV or BCH hating on Bitcoin. Well, like, you're going to chop the tree down. We see vice versa, people attacking other change. But I think he makes a good point that it's kind of like an ecosystem. So if you're attacking all these other legitimate projects, it's not a good look for the space. And yeah, I think privacy is going to be huge. I recently read an article where Monero was being sent over the Tor browser and they're trying to find some money. They couldn't find it. You know, it does have good, I guess, bad use cases for that, for crime or whatever, but it's also has good use cases for privacy. So
I don't let anyone ever tell you that if you don't have anything to hide, you don't have anything to worry about, because privacy is quite important, and it's getting more so, you know, as everything gets more invasive, it's in our homes day to day as well.
Definitely. And you see some of this just this bias of, if you don't have anything to hide, you have nothing to fear when it comes to that kind of stuff. I recently saw there was a law that they wanted to drug test police officers, and the police officer said that's an invasion of your privacy. Well, if you have nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear, right?
That's funny. Yeah. Well, it's never fun when that, you know, the same tactic is being used against you instead of when you're able to impose it on other people. But yeah, I know, who knows how many cops would pass a drug test, and frankly, I don't care. Unless, you know, if a guy has a hard day at work and he sees a couple dead bodies and he wants to go home and smoke a joint, I really don't give a shit. It doesn't affect me. Don't be high at work, just like the rest of us, and I don't care. It shouldn't be a thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm kind of curious. Are there any specific projects that you're hyped on these days? Besides Bitcoin or Monero or anything else, or you want to expand on projects you're excited about these days?
Oh yeah. So Cade's been setting this one up. He knew I was going to say, I like Ethereum Classic. I'm like the only person in the world. And I'm not hyped on it because I'm hyped on it from an investment standpoint. So I look at Ethereum Classic and I look at Ethereum and all these other platform coins. And I think that the number one reason why I like Classic is because of Ethereum, you know, changing over to proof of stake. And I think a lot of miners are going to switch to the Classic chain when that happens. And the hash power is going to make that coin more valuable. I don't necessarily know if any of these coins, Ethereum, Cardano, Ethereum Classic, Tezos, you know, smart contract coins, I've really thought about it a bit, and I haven't. I don't know how we solve the scaling problem. You know, it's probably going to have to be a second layer solution. So if you're looking at something like Ethereum and Ethereum Classic, and you know you need a second layer solution for this to really go big time, would you rather have the coin that, you know, sticks with its principles of immutability, fungibility, and has a principled community? Or do you want a coin like Ethereum that's really has a figurehead and is able to be manipulated, has a lot of centralized holders. I like Ethereum still. I have nothing against it, but from an investment standpoint, I think that Classic has a lot of room to rip if the hash power goes to that chain instead of Ethereum. And, you know, so I like to own some because I think it could do some things and surprise people at some point.
That's interesting, actually.
Josh, are you a big fan of Ethereum Classic?
Yeah, and honestly, I'm a big fan of contrarian views that are considered, like that one is. That isn't just like, all right, I'm with this one because everyone else is for the other one. It's actually, you've thought about it, and there's really good reasoning behind it. So I think that's really quite smart. And I think having a position in that you're willing to accept some type of risk, if you've already factored in the risk there, then I think that's a good position. So I like that type of thinking there. So that's pretty good.
I mean, it's $4 a coin. You spend $100 on it, and my God, Ethereum was $1,400 at one point. So I'm not saying it'll ever do that, but if it can even have a nice run up to $100 or something, that's a great investment. So who knows?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that that's the right way of looking at things. I think that we probably do share the way of approaching projects in that way. Like it's almost a contrarian view within a contrarian view already, because crypto is already pretty fringe, and then being able to look within that and then also see different paradigms within that is also quite good. So I quite like that. It's that was refreshing. Like, I had my own position in BSV that didn't work out.
So there's still time. I mean, the problem is you've got.
I definitely thought there was massive upside, minimal downside. The downside has been minimal. I think that ship has sailed though. But I was very clear with Cade. I was like, okay, this Tulip Fund, this thing that people are talking about nowadays. I was talking about that like 4 or 5 months ago with Cade, and I was like, all right, there's a decent chance that this comes off. It might be a 1 in 10. It might be a 10% chance it comes off. And then if this does play out, it's like a 10, 20, even 100x return. And the downside is very minimal. So it's that type of plays that you've got to be willing to make, and also to be able to look at the whole picture. So you, with your contrarian view with Ethereum Classic, and also calling out, you know, you didn't really call him out, but calling out Vitalik as the Pope of the Ethereum network, you know, he's basically Jesus for these guys. He put out a post 2 days ago. People are absolutely loving it. They're going crazy about it. And it's actually a very normie post. It's kind of like, oh, some people think this, some people think that. Have you seen that post, Cade? Vitalik's recent post?
No, I haven't. I haven't been following Ethereum or Vitalik very much recently. I've been following other stuff, but...
All right, let's share that in the show notes. Ryan, have you had a look at Vitalik's latest sermon, as it's called?
No, but I'm on his Twitter page. If I can find, if you want to start, I can scroll through and see if I can catch up.
All right, I'll share that in the description. And basically, it's just like, all right, there are some things that people think are okay, and certain things that people don't think are okay. And in certain situations, this is acceptable. But then he tries to draw some kind of correlation between things that are basically the same, but there are certain social distinctions between those two. And in one regard, they're considered okay, and the other regard, they're considered absolutely abhorrent. And he's trying to draw that line. And I think you bringing up Ethereum Classic is very interesting. And let's transition now into the next question, Cade, because...
Yeah, so we've talked a little bit about what Ryan's into when it comes to crypto. And yeah, let's get into crypto trading right now. So like Ryan before, this side hustle turned into his full business when he had his Jerry Maguire show me the money moment. He's kind of got a new side hustle and something he does on the side that could maybe turn into his new full-time job. So he's been excited about crypto, and he's been trading crypto, and he's kind of taking it a little bit more serious. You could call it maybe a side hustle or a passion. So some people like me, they thought they were geniuses in 2017 when everything was going up. I thought I was a trading genius, but then you realize it's not quite that easy. So Ryan, can you tell us a little bit about how you got into crypto trading?
Sure. So I, like everyone else, like you, in late 2017 was on Bittrex, buying and selling. And, you know, I remember buying Litecoin for, I don't know what it was. I don't know, it was $10 or something, and seeing it go up to 100 and all this other stuff. And I didn't have any idea really what I was doing, but I thought I did. And so then I kind of realized that at some point in early 2018. And Kate actually used to call me County Tether was his nickname for me. So back in 2018. County because I live in the same town I grew up in, so I'm a townie. But Tether because I was going in and out of Tether basically all the time. That's how I was trading. I was on Binance, and I was just trading Bitcoin. And when I thought Bitcoin was going down, I go into Tether. When I thought Bitcoin was going up, I was going back into Bitcoin. I basically broke even doing that, which I guess for a starter is fine. But I wanted to get more involved. I was always a little bit hesitant to get involved with, you know, BitMEX or any of leveraged positions, but I found a Discord group that I really liked, and the group had had a system that has a little bit of an edge that I learned. I paid another trader some Monero actually to learn the rest of his system, and I'm still learning. So I'm not, you know, I don't I'm not that good. I'm profitable, but I lose a lot too. So the system is real simple. I like to use clean horizontal lines. I use pin bars instead of candle bars. I'm looking for momentum candles, and I'm looking for trends. And I use some other things too, like BitMEX funding and things like that. But sort of got involved with this group and got on Deribit after being with this group for a little while, which is a lesser known platform for derivatives trading. It's just Bitcoin and Ethereum at the moment. Just been doing little bits here and there, and I like it. It's a real challenge mentally. Which is what I enjoy. It's a discipline. I like it. I like learning new things. I like learning new disciplines, and this has been one of the best challenges of my life. It's hard. It's really hard. But I like it. I don't wager big amounts. You know, most of my crypto is locked up at the moment, and I trade around with little bits and pieces and try not to go crazy because, you know, that was my computer. So yeah, got into it that way. And I'm on TradingView all the time, and I'm definitely like a chart nerd, but trading wise, yeah, I'm doing better. And I like the system, and I'm always trying to learn more.
All right. So this leads me directly into some serious questions now.
Yeah, those you guys.
Some dark side of the HODL moon type of stuff. Now, the reason that I'm going down this impromptu avenue is because my friend, I used to live with him in Thailand, 2009, 10, 11. Over the past 2 years, he's lost $500,000 trading crypto. And he's just outed himself. Basically, he was kind of quiet for a year or two. I didn't really hear from him. And then he's come back onto YouTube and he's like, here I am. And the reason I'm back is because I just had a coming to Jesus moment. Like, what the hell have I done? I've lost $500,000 trading crypto. So number one question is, do you believe that there actually can be trends that you can follow in crypto because there's so much manipulation in the exchanges and there's lots of dodgy dealings that go on these exchanges? And do you trust the exchanges not to fuck over their traders? Because essentially they have the inside knowledge about order books, the volumes, they know the actual real numbers. There might be different things that you could see on your screen in terms of, like, all right, the bid and the ask, but they know the true numbers. They know the weighted numbers. This is without market makers. This is without any bots trading. Are you confident that they are not dumping on their own traders and manipulating the markets? Because this is the number one thing that this guy's 100% paranoid about. And this is a guy that I will honestly say has made over 100K a year playing online poker for 10 years straight. So he's made over made $1 million playing online poker, and he got absolutely wrecked in crypto. So I'm kind of on the fence about it. You know, I'm a crypto lover, but now you're the guy that's saying that you're getting into trades and you know, you're learning the ropes. And honestly, you're a smart guy, and Cade's introduced you to us and our audience. So what's your initial gut reaction to what I've just said?
Oh, it's absolutely manipulated. Arthur is hunting your stops. Don't ever think that he's not. So it's sort of something that I think if you're going to get into it, you just have to accept. So there's it's just like with, you know, we were talking about calculating the risk baked into the cake. That's part of it. If you want to trade derivatives, you have to understand that this is the way these exchanges are set up now, and you need to be very careful. So you can be successful if you have proper risk management. And I know you see that all over Twitter, all these anonymous accounts that you might follow on Twitter say this constantly, and they post charts and blah, 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 and they're probably all getting wrecked too. And the number one reason being is people put too much leverage on in too tight of a position, or they're trying to scalp too much. And Arthur and his team, I do believe, I don't know to the extent of what's going on, but I do believe that there is incentive for them to do it. So unless proven otherwise, why wouldn't they do it? He's in the Seychelles Islands. There's no jurisdiction where he is. No big government's coming after him at the moment for doing this kind of stuff, if he's doing it. And I've been around enough traders who have been trading crypto for, you know, at least 5 years or so, and they're all convinced that Arthur does this kind of stuff because they've seen it. You know, the larger your position, the more likely they think it's going to get hunted. I don't know if I'm quite in that camp, but kind of knowing that, I try and swing trade more than anything, and I don't use like a lot of leverage. Like if I enter a long position, and you have to know, like, under the last swing is where everyone's stops are. That's where they're going to try and liquidate you before it goes up. And if you trade enough, you see this stuff happening over and over and over again. And all of these moves, I think, are really just designed to liquidate positions and to clear out room for the big players to make their money. So you have to know that going into it. If you want to scalp, get in and out, you know, take your profits. If you want to go into a more long-term position, just make sure you're below leverage and you're not going to get screwed by something unexpected, or you're going to be able to exit the position accordingly. You got to have a plan. You know, all this stuff translates from poker. So I'm actually, most of the best traders that I've worked with or that share information with me, have a lot of them have come over from the online poker community. And I was never involved with that, but apparently it just became unworkable once algo bots got into poker, and you just couldn't beat them anymore, was what most of them say. So it seems a lot of the same things are happening in this space. You know, a lot of people talk about, you know, big players with their algo bots and a lot of manipulation going on in the crypto market. And you know what? If there's an opportunity for that to happen, it's happening. Like there's no doubt in my mind that there's some manipulation going on, or a lot, or a ton of it. And you know, it's just part of what you have to accept if you want to go into it. And just, you know, and everyone says the same shit. Don't risk more than you can lose. Proper risk management, blah blah blah. But it's really true, and that's the number one name of the game. You can sit in a position for a long time and wait for it to turn for you if you really want to. And I've done that before. It's not necessarily the best way to do it, but if you're not over leveraged like a pleb, then you won't get liquidated. And if you can't really grasp that concept, then just buy spot and don't, you know, start with what I was doing before and just trade from cash to spot and watch how the prices move that way. So you don't really have a lot of risk and you're not going to lose your coins if you have a bad trade.
Well, yeah, Cali Taylor, you've got some good advice there. I think that's good for the new traders. It's also very important that people don't over leverage themselves, get themselves wrecked. Cryptosaurus wrecked is not who you want to be in this new year. So, all right, Cade.
Yeah, go. I would just say that, Josh said, breaking even is a lot better than losing 500K. I think all this advice, people always hear it, but they never really follow it. And yeah, I do know that Ryan's a trader, but he's also a hodler. He's not gonna go YOLO and lose too much. I kind of want to go back a little bit, and I know a lot of listeners are trying to get into trading. So maybe Ryan, you could elaborate a little bit more for our beginners, like tell us the difference between candle bars and pin bars. And when you say horizontal lines, are you talking about support lines? Can you tell us a little bit more about your general trading strategy for some of our newer listeners?
Sure. So pin bars are, they're pin bars. So if you're on TradingView, next to the time frame in the top left, you can do bars, candles, hollow candles, Aiken Ashi, line, whatever. So I use bars because bars allow me to see areas of inefficiency better than, which would be, I guess you would call it a gap, better than candle bars. It's just easier to see. So I go with the HLC bars, and I'll put a chart on in a particular time frame, and I'm really looking for extremes. I'm looking for places where price has reversed or reacted multiple times. And, you know, one thing I will say that I learned that's been huge for me is that chart has history. So if you are trying to create your support and resistance lines on your chart, you don't want to just look at where you are in January 2020. Because where we are now at 74 whatever actually has been semi-important over a decent amount of time. So if you go back to like September 2018, there was one last little rally before we flatlined and died on the Bitcoin chart. And we're actually right about at where that happened. And if you can go back even further, there was another one back in November of 2017 in about the same area. So when you're drawing these lines, you want to, sometimes I'll go back to the 2017 chart and I'll draw my lines on the 2017 chart and I'll move them over and then I'll move over to the current range that we're in that started maybe in like June. And sure enough, like you'll find that your line is going to line up with important support and resistance areas in the present by using the past to find those areas. The higher the time frame, the more obvious the reversal or pattern of reversal, the stronger you can probably bet that it's going to be. Like the peak of the 13,900 rally. Let me look at my chart. If you go to a weekly chart, it was actually right where there was a few closes. Back in 2017, we're way up there. And if you go to the monthly, it's even more obvious. So not that I knew it was going to stop there, but I knew there was a good. So if you look at the monthly chart, that month closed the exact spot that the December 17th month. Sorry, that monthly chart of the high was June of this year or last year was the exact point where the December 17th monthly pin bar closed. I mean, those aren't coincidences, right? So those are areas where there's orders, there's old orders sitting there sometimes, there's new orders. There's a reason that closes happen and that extremes happen on the candles. And if you look, sorry, on the pin bars or whatever you're using, but if you use those if you use the history of the chart, you can create good support resistance lines. That's the first thing I look for. And then once you have your support and resistance lines, the next thing you want to be able to tell is momentum. So the way I tell momentum is real simple. It's just looking at the pin bars and you're looking for a couple of things. You're looking for closes at extremes is one of the real big clues. Engulfing pin bars are other big clues. I don't use any indicators. I don't use MACD. I don't use VWAP. I don't use any of the oscillators. I don't use moving averages, because it's all past information. I'm interested in it. I like to see confluence, so I'll check volume. I'll check things like that once in a while, but I really just want to focus on the simple things, which is horizontal lines, momentum, and trend lines. Trend lines are diagonal lines for anybody that doesn't know, and they're really not as reliable as horizontals, I don't think, but they can, again, you're looking for confluence. You're looking for ideas that say, okay, here we are. Here's why I think the momentum is changing or about to change. I do look at BitMEX funding. There is definitely a correlation between the funding and premium index for BitMEX on XBT, which if you don't know, XBT is the ticker for the BitMEX perpetual inverse swap contract. So you have, if you're on TradingView, there's a neobutane indicator that's free you can get. And if you look at the funding rates, there is strong confluence between, you know, if everybody's long, so the price goes down. If everybody's short, price goes up. And it usually only happens at extremes, and you can't use it and say, okay, everybody's short, I'm going long, because you can't just be a contrarian. But it's another area of confluence. And, you know, no one's got a perfect system. There's holes in everything. And you just try and look at it and get as much confluence on these things as you can and make an informed decision and always have a plan. So you have to know where you're getting in, where you're getting out. If it goes bad, you have to have an exit point. Always use a stop loss and know where you're going to take profits too, because
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You're going that was my follow-up question is going to be, how do you, you know, what do you find to be the most reliable patterns and tools? But you pretty much already answered that. You know, I think chart as history. I definitely agree with that. You think you're going to see those same historical patterns and engulf pin bars, extremes, closes. I think those are all great ways to try and see where the trends are going. So you're obviously very knowledgeable when it comes to trading, and sometimes simpler is better. So I kind of want to, I have two kind of follow-up questions. One is, how have you learned crypto trading? Was it mostly through self-study, classes? Was it practice? Was it chart reading? So how have you learned? You mentioned you took a class, but are there any other ways? And my other question is, who do you listen to for financial advice? Do you listen to crypto Twitter, or are you more like independent? You kind of do your own research.
So the support and resistance concepts I learned from a friend in a Discord. The momentum concepts were part of that edge, that system. I did a pay group. That's the guy I paid some Monero to, and we had some one-on-one conferences and stuff like that, where he would, you know, load the chart on the screen and just go over stuff step by step with me. I wouldn't trust anybody on crypto Twitter ever when it comes to financial advice, when it comes to trading. If you really want to learn a system that's good for crypto, you can look at. I would look more towards the Forex guys than the stock guys. I think it's more, it's more applicable to what we're doing here with the systems that are used. But I don't, and that's just based on what I've seen in comparison. I don't really have a good, I can use this system for stocks, but it works better for Forex. I don't exactly know why, because I haven't really dug into all the technicals, but that's sort of what I would say. But I would look for a good Forex trader, a good stock trader. I wouldn't listen to anybody on crypto Twitter, especially not anybody with an anonymous handle. Don't fall for that stuff. There's tons of scammers in crypto, and they all seem legit at first. And there's a lot of guys out there that might be good, could be good, have good systems. Like, I know Crypto Cred has a lot of free stuff out there. You know, Dante, Trader Main, I don't know. There's a bunch of guys that do this stuff. So pick and choose what you want. I wouldn't necessarily go that route unless you know who this guy is. You can see a track record. They're posting trades publicly because you just don't know. There's a ton of scammers. It's so easy to disappear on crypto Twitter or in a Discord or Telegram or whatever you're doing. So just be careful. Try and get some credibility from people. And, you know, every system is different. There's different ways. There's people that do Elliott Waves that make a ton of money. And I think Elliott Waves is just complete bullshit voodoo. But that's me. So maybe that's because, yeah, I don't get it. But, you know, that's...
Hey, Ryan, you can trust me. Send me 0.5 Bitcoin and I'll send you 3 Bitcoin in 4 months.
Such a good deal. But the thing is, people were obviously doing it because they were persistent. They were going on. That was going on for months and months. And, you know, people lost money. And I don't, you know, but just be careful. You know, find your edge. And if you're not sure, don't just try and learn. Like, everything that you see, understand that somebody that's smarter than you and has more money also sees that thing. So you're not ever going to be unique in your system. There's anything you're looking at, everyone else is looking at. There's no secrets on a chart. It's all right there. But your edge is, you know, is whatever it is. There's different ways to have edge, but that's what you need. And if you don't think you have edge, if you don't think you've got a way to beat the system, then don't try until you're sure. Or paper trade. If you think you've got if you've got a good edge, paper trade for a while and see how you do there. And just realize that when your money is actually on the line, and you're sitting there shitting your pants and you're about to get liquidated, that it's a lot different than when you're paper trading too, because emotions are your worst enemy. You can learn the best system in the world. And that's where I think I have a good system, but I'm still trying to master my emotions.
I want to tell you about my system. So Ryan, aka Towny Tether, you and Josh kind of have a similar system in that you're kind of in and out of the market a little bit through stablecoins and Tether.
Yep.
And as you know me, Blockade, I practice full spectrum HODL warfare and just dollar cost average in because I'm afraid I'm going to miss that rocket to the moon. So what do you think of my trading strategy?
I think that if that's what you're comfortable with, it's fine. You're betting more on the ecosystem as a whole being successful, which I tend to agree with. I think that you'll probably end up, you know, making a lot of money just by sitting on it, you know, to be honest with you, because it's one of the hardest things to do. There's a lot of people that owned a lot of Bitcoin at a lot of different prices, and they don't have any anymore, because they were doing the same things that Josh and I were doing. And when the price went up on them, they didn't want to buy back in at a higher price. And they waited and they waited and they waited, and they lost out on millions. So keep hodling. I agree with it. I don't know. I think this cycle is going to take longer than a lot of people think. You know, we could bounce back up to 11,000 BTC and still nuke. Who knows? But if you're patient enough and you believe in it and you're okay in your own living situation, not just UK, but anybody who's doing that, then do it. I don't see anything wrong with it, as long as you are willing to accept if you are wrong, and you know, and then if you're right, the reward's quite high. And history has shown that just the ability to have strong hands and not sell your bags has rewarded quite a lot of people. And it's screwed over 10 times more people, which is why the prices gone up. So
strong hands. I'm the HODL warrior. Don't worry about me, Ryan.
Strong hands, Kate. I think you'll be fine.
I am kind of dabbling with like trading bots, and there's this new thing called Sets. They trade specific charts. I think they're a token. We might try and have them on the show, but I'm trying to get back into trading. But yeah, in 2017, I was making a lot of money, and I was starting to lose money, and I was like, I don't want to be that person that loses $500,000. So I started to get more into that HODL mindset, and just, you know, for me, it's kind of more of a long term plan. Like, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, I'm still going to be hodling it, because I think long term it's going to be going up. So,
well, that's
an important point, really. It's about long term view. So I've talked about this before, and I'll just bring it up again for new listeners and for also Ryan's benefit. And that's, you know, I've been involved in crypto in one way or another for quite a while. Since 2011, it's the first time I used Bitcoin, and for years my younger brother, he's a normal banker, he's like in the investment banking world, he works for Schroders, which is an established bank from the 1800s in the UK, and he's like, no way, like crypto's a joke, stay well away from it. And he only got in, he actually eventually said, okay, I'm gonna have a position in this, let me get in. And he chose like the best time, aka the worst time, which was December 2017 to get involved. But he's never asked me, ever. He doesn't care. He said, this position is a long-term hold. I'm gonna only look at this in 5 years, and then after that we can talk about it. And he doesn't care about the price. Like, he's never ever talked about it. So I think that this is the right mentality. It's the idea of, do you appreciate the underlying technology? Is there a use case there? If you're eventually convinced of that, then you can actually endure the short-term ups and downs, because you don't even look at it. The HODL warrior has won again. What do you think about that, Kate? I think you are, you know, you're outclassing all of us here.
Yeah, well, I think in the last 10 years, just hodling Bitcoin was the best investment ever. It's not that hard. But yeah, your friend is maybe even more different than me. I at least look at the price. I don't look at it every day, but I probably look at it 2 or 3 times a week. Sometimes I'll look at it every day. But if you look at it too much, you worry about it. You might think, it went from 7,700 to 7,500. I might have to like sell everything because I'm going to lose it all. No, I've got strong hands. I'm hodling to the moon. And it's interesting about your friend not even looking at the price. I don't know how big of a position he has, but yeah. I think it's good to look at the price, but yeah, when I was trading a lot in 2017, you know, it was like almost a full-time job. After my other job, I was spending 7 or 8 hours looking at charts. And yeah, it can drive you a little crazy if you every single little red candlestick makes you worry. So also, it's you have more peace of mind and you're not stressing about it all the time if you just know you're going to be holding it long-term.
Yeah,
that's, you know, that's a good point.
I think you're right about, you know, what Josh said about just believing in the technology. And that's, to me, that's also what it comes down to. It's not just the limited, you know, the scarcity, you know, the things that make it, you know, valuable, or also it's utility. It's better money. Smart contracts are better than anything banks or real estate companies or stock houses are doing at the moment. And personally, I can absolutely envision a future where our sovereign currency, where real estate transactions, where your social security and identity information, and even you know, the stock market is run on some sort of platform like this. Because doesn't it make more sense to have these things on a blockchain that's secure than on a place on a server somewhere with a single point of failure? And the currency part of the cryptography is what incentivizes people to keep doing this. So, sure, I could see a day someday where a major company, a Google and Alibaba, launches an ICO and the coins are actually equity. It makes total sense to me. So, yeah, and that's just one example. But I don't see how this doesn't change the world in some way, some shape, some form, someday. We could all be wrong about Bitcoin and Ethereum, but I don't think that this space is going anywhere.
Yeah, it's got other use cases too. Do you think you could ever see yourself using the blockchain for like inventory tracking or parts of your business in the future?
Yeah, it's possible. It's not, for me, it's not maybe necessary. You know, and I've been a believer that supply chain is a good function for blockchain. I don't know how the tokenomics wind up working with that. I don't know how the value that a supply chain blockchain will actually have as far as like the crypto that's behind it, like a V chain or a Walton chain or any of these other coins, Ambrosius chain. So there's a lot that do this. They track. They have RFID chips. You can put it on things. But at the same time, it's also, it's garbage in, garbage out, right? So if you have shitty information going onto your blockchain, it's not worth anything. So I think there's an application. There's a way to do it. It's got to get smarter and faster and more efficient. But right now, I don't think it's quite there. But someday, yeah, I could see it. I could see, especially a big business, you know, a Walmart, someone that's bringing shit over from every country in the world. It's got a million containers on the water all the time. Could definitely benefit from something like this. And I'm sure they're looking into it, but it's just a matter of, you know, scale and making sure the information is good and things like that.
Okay. I have another question, follow-up question. Do you accept crypto for payment at NPT Sportswear?
No, but I would. So there's a couple of things. Like, my average transaction with NPT is quite small as far as, you know, on a grand scale of things. So maybe $500 or $1,000, you know, whatever, something like that. But we also have a lot of $50 transactions. So I would do it. So if we had a big job, there was like a $20,000-$30,000 invoice, sure, I would accept it. But right now, the odds of said customer having crypto ready to deploy out of their business account is probably zero. The tax implications of me converting my crypto to fiat or holding it are stupid and complicated in the United States, and I don't feel like dealing with it. So yeah, I mean, I would. If I knew I had the ability to accept crypto and it was going to be a viable opportunity, like the customer has it, it's easy for them to do it. It's easy for me to accept it. The tax stuff is more of a simple process than it is now. And I know that I don't need to convert it to fiat for, I would like to, if I'm going to accept it for my business, I'd like to hold it for a year, because right now it's subject to capital gains tax in the United States. So if I accept Bitcoin from you for some custom sweatshirts, I have to hold it in my wallet for a year, or it's a short-term capital gain. If I hold it in my wallet for over a year, it's a long-term capital gain. So as a business, the difference between your taxation rate and when you move the crypto out of this wallet is a big deal. So a lot of companies, myself included, if you're accepting a big percentage of your gross revenue as crypto, you can't really HODL that for a year. You need that money for payroll and goods and stuff like that. So I think what's going to happen when this is all going to come flooding out into the open is when government makes a clear stance and or makes it simpler for businesses and people to use this stuff. It's an absolute nightmare in the United States to try and track your crypto transactions. When I was a noob trader and doing, Bittrex stuff back in 2017, I was making so many fucking trades. And Binance on the year after, my register of transactions on my tax bill is like hundreds of pages, hundreds. So like, and I was honest, I paid my taxes when I made money. I had a loss in 2018 just because I moved coins after they went down. And, it's going to take me, years to, if you have a loss on crypto, it's subject to long-term. So you can only deduct $2,000 a year from your taxes in the United States. Every time you move crypto from one wallet to another, it's a taxable transaction. It's not like money. There's no like-kind exchange, which there should be. So, in my opinion, if you want to tax it, you tax it when it's moving in and out of your sovereign currency. So if I go from USD to crypto or vice versa, fine, tax me. But if I'm going from USD to Bitcoin to Litecoin to XRP, I'm on an exchange. Like, it should just be a like-kind exchange that you should be able to do. And the exchanges would be able to give you that information pretty easily. But that's kind of a long answer. But no, it's too complex right now. I think once governments make this simpler, hopefully they do, if they've got incentive to block crypto, maybe they make it more complicated and, try and kill the space that way. But that's the big thing. It's nobody wants to deal with the nightmare of reporting this stuff from a business perspective.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Well, you've heard it here first, folks. If you've got a big order over 10K, MPT Sportswear is open for business to accept Bitcoin.
Yes, we are.
But I totally forgot that. Yeah. The short-term and long-term capital gains also complicates it. And yeah, if you don't have a large cash reserve in your business, it's hard to hold it for over a year. And you make up a lot of good points about the rules and the regulations in the U.S. I've complained about them a lot on this show. Me and Josh should probably have like a crypto tax expert on for our U.S. listeners. I've loved this conversation. I don't really have any other questions, but maybe Josh, you have some more questions, and then Ryan, you can give us some final thoughts on crypto or your business and how to reach you, how to do business at MPT Sportswear. So Josh, you have anything else you want to say or any questions?
Well, actually, we could go another half an hour. I've really enjoyed Ryan's commentary, and actually think that he could really expand on a lot of these topics further, but time's limited, so I'll just keep it to one or two questions, if that's all right. So the number one thing really is about being a businessman in the 21st century. So obviously we talked mostly about crypto, but we started the conversation with business, and hopefully let's end the conversation with business. So what do you see in the next 5-10 years, opportunities out there for business in general, e-commerce? It could be international trade, it could be within the United States, it could be hopefully a deal between the United Kingdom and the United States, a nice trade deal with Boris and Trumpy, that would be great. Let's see what can happen there. So where do you see the opportunities ahead in the next 5-10 years? What's the next decade have in store for business people like ourselves?
So I think that there's going to be opportunities for blind spots. So we're living in the era of mega corporations. And NPT is what I've kind of found, with the screen printing, embroidery, promotional products industry. I think you're going to find a lot of blind spots in the areas that these massive companies can't cover. I think a lot of those are going to come with the demise of, not demise, but the downsizing of retail. So the Amazon, Google, Walmart, these companies are obviously killing a lot of mom and pops, but I think it's going to create an opportunity for people to create businesses where they're offering value, products of value. There's a lot of stuff out there right now that's just absolute shit. It's junk. You can go to Walmart, you can go to Amazon, you can buy this stuff. It's crap. I think a lot of people want to see more of a middle of the road value type of stuff. People are looking for unique products. There's not a lot of mass produced. People are really into crafted stuff. So craft beer and farmers markets and food and things like this is really growing. The craft beer industry in the U.S. is going crazy. And I think that can spill over into other areas where people, again, are looking to upgrade their lifestyle a little bit from where we've kind of known the last 20 years, where Chinese goods just sort of flooded into everywhere. There's going to be a lot of middlemen, I think, like me, connecting international trade. Trade deals would be great. I think that could be very beneficial. You know, as a libertarian type, I am a free trade kind of guy, so I hope to see more of these sort of deals going through. And I think it creates opportunities for local representation and in certain industries to find a foothold. So people want to do business with people in their own country for the most part. So, excuse me, with international trade, there's a lot of that that goes on where people have goods and services in a different country that are needed elsewhere, but there's agencies that need to get be the middleman of sorts to make the deals happen. So I think there's going to be a lot of that. I think we're going to have some currency problems too at some point. I don't see how long we can keep this kicking this can down the road with the money printing and things like that. But I could be very wrong about that. So, I think that really looking for opportunities in the middle of markets, you're not going to start a giant factory. You're not going to beat Walmart at the retail end. But there's going to be value segments in the middle, I think a lot of people are going to find that's going to make them a lot of money at some point.
Yeah, I think that's very insightful. I'm trying to work on my business game a little bit. And one thing you mentioned is there's going to be currency problems. And I definitely agree with that as well. I think that's another reason, in addition to making money, why I think people, although this isn't financial advice, should maybe hold a little bit of crypto. It's kind of almost an insurance policy, a hedge against something bad happening with your native currency. And if it does, people are going to flood into crypto or maybe something else like gold as well. We recently saw with what's happening in Iran, there's a huge premium on Bitcoin because people are trying to exit the real and get into Bitcoin and get into other hard assets. So I think that's also something that we've talked about a little bit on the show. And as far as it comes to business, I think there's a space in the middle. Yeah, you can't, when it comes to scale, it's hard to compete with an Amazon or a Walmart in the US. But yeah, there's definitely space. There's always opportunities for businesses. And I think if you look for them, you can find them.
Yeah, and just going back to earlier, I think we've already seen this sort of thing with the flight into crypto. You know, a lot of people, and myself included for the most part, think that the rise of gold and Bitcoin this summer was almost always connected to news from the US-China trade deals. If you followed them, like when there was a headline that would come out, the algo bots, which is, you know, really what they track headlines. And this run-up wasn't all trade war, but I think there was a lot of big players hedging because they weren't sure what was going to happen between the U.S. and China. And a lot of this run-up was caused by that sort of hedge, which in my mind, you know, if I'm right, then there's no doubt in my own personal thinking that this is real. The Bitcoin, this is happening. That this is not just magic internet beans, and people are taking this seriously. I don't see any other way around it. So unless you know, this was something different, but I think you're seeing it again now with this whole Iran thing. Monero popped 10% in a day as soon as this stuff started happening. And I don't think that's a coincidence. Now, granted, the market is looking like it's due for at least a relief rally all around. But, you know, something like that, I can't help but notice that when we have international tensions in a place like Iran, and Monero just jumps 10% instantly. So I'm kind of pissed because I wanted Monero in the $40 range, and I have to, you know, come up with a new plan. But, you know, I still think it's
touched
a steal
upon
at 50 bucks,
something so. There. That's quite interesting. It's basically when the real world, quote unquote, real world markets seem to becoming close to the precipice, then you get like this massive uptick in volume in crypto. So essentially what we can reliably say is that whenever there is uncertainty in the fiat markets, then it's now become a safe haven for capital to go to. And I think that that's going to continue on in 2020 and beyond for the next decade. I think whenever the Bitcoin price surges, it's because there might be some uncertainty in the market. And then I think you alluded to that earlier when, you know, the US-China thing was really kicking off in the summer. That's when a lot of money went into Bitcoin. I think we're going to see more of that over the next 5-10 years. And then you've only got to consider the halving of the mining rewards that is going to come up in May this year. I mean, this could be a big year for Bitcoin. But then again, just like we talked about earlier, let's not get too fixated upon the price. But we have to do this. It's a tradition. You have to predict the price of Bitcoin at the end of the year. You have to make a call.
Okay.
So we've had a range of opinions over the past 25 shows or some 20 shows. It's odd that we've done. We've had as low as 6K from me, and we've had as high as 86,000 from me. So in between both of those figures, you're free to go wherever you want. You can go lower or higher. It's up to you. So, you know, what's your high? What's your low for 2020 on the Bitcoin price?
Okay, so I'm going to say the most likely high I see is going to be in the mid-12s this year. I think we are either close to or have bottomed, but that's still yet to be determined, obviously. There's nothing that says we can't go lower. I don't really think we go lower than 4,500. I think that I think that we either blow the top and get over 20 at this point, and if we don't, I think is kind of more likely right now. But you know, these geopolitical things are going to have a big say in it. But I think 12.5. I'm going to say we're going to have a slow, steady growth this year. And I personally think 2021 is the year we really blow the top and get to $50, $80, $100,000 Bitcoin.
Yeah, so your prediction is a 12.5 for the high,
yeah,
and maybe 4,500 for the low?
Yeah, that's what I'm going with.
Yeah, well, I think that's a little bit more pessimistic than most of our guests, but I love to get all the different predictions. And honestly, the market is so wild, I think, that really nobody knows where it's going.
I think it's going to take longer to get through this cycle than we're used to in the crypto space. The higher the market cap gets, the harder it is to move. And just personally, I think that, yeah, that's what I'm. I think it's coming. I think it's if it's not late this year, 2021 is going to be the year. So hopefully I'm wrong and we hit 86 this year. I have no problem with that. But I'm going to say 12.5.
All right.
Thank you very much. Nice. Cheers. Thanks for the prediction. Also, thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate it, Ryan. We've had a really good conversation. We talked about a lot of different things today. I'm sure we could go on for a few more hours, but alas, that's the dark side of the Huddle Moon. We only have an hour or two to get through the main.
Ryan, why don't you give us
share your info and how can people get in contact with you?
Sure. It's my name's Ryan Tucker. It's my company's NPT Sportswear. N as in Nancy, P as in Peter, T as in Tom. You can just Google us or go to nptsportswear.com. Our contact info is all on there. We produce screen printed and embroidered apparel and promotional products, and we can ship nationwide. So if you need anything like that, give us a shout. And guys, thank you very much for having me on. I've also greatly enjoyed the conversation, and I agree with Josh. We could probably go all day, but you know, Josh has to get to bed. So
yeah, we actually need some promotional products. So you're definitely in consideration when we buy some amazing Dark Side of the Hollow Moon pens and amazing embroidered polos.
Sounds good.
So that'll do it for us today. Until next time, we'll see you on the dark side
of the Huddle Moon.
Huddle Moon. Copy.
Thank you for joining us on Dark Side of the Huddle Moon. If you haven't already subscribed, please do so. Also, be sure to join our Telegram group, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and follow us on BitChute and YouTube, where you can find all the episodes as well as highlights from previous episodes. You can also visit us at darksideofthehuddlemoon.com.
Huddle Moon!